My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, the rain is a gun. Fire,
we are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. If you would like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcast, and you have a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside your other host, Case Lowe. And I feel like, Case, we are kind of, in a way, getting back into the swing of things after the last few weeks. And we have a corking to talk about, buddy, and not a lot of drama for once.
I think the contents of this podcast will judge whether or not there's some drama to go about, because we are in the midst of a very interesting stretch in this company. You know, I continue to be amazed at where we were feeling coming out of the January Corkin, the signs of concern as we left February, especially that Corkin show into the rest of the month. And then as we got into March, what felt like really one of the weaker months that I've seen from the company in quite some time, where the Corkin show was incredibly weak and the spot shows that made tape all around weren't exactly anything to write home about. I did not love this April card on paper. As I sit here continuing to type away at the written review for this show, and of course, as we're speaking here, I am still not entirely sure how I felt about some of the things on this show, but it is nevertheless, I think, a very interesting point in this promotion's history, and I think we're living that in real time, and I find that to be very interesting.
Yeah, I feel like that even though the card on paper was not necessarily the most appealing, especially with like a Gotcha Dokro versus Gotcha Dokro Dreamgate title match. And then really your next thing is the 10th anniversary match. And with those two things kind of as the cornerstones, I had a feeling going into this show that not that there was going to basically be a let's blow up the promotion and the unit landscape and let's go see where things are going to go, especially as it relates to Golden Coliseum and with Daya's departure and like the situation with some of the units there. I thought it was kind of interesting the way that they kind of, and I think that a lot of it goes towards the cage match that's going to be happening at Golden Coliseum, and using this show, and in a lot of ways, this is a go home Corkin for that show. There's going to be the Mania weekend stuff coming up, and then there's a There is a cross Fukuoka and Kobe Sambo Hall, but really the meat of the card has been put together and out there at this point. That having kind of jiggering of the cage match with Big Bashi Mizu clearly out for with a severe knee injury, and then
out for the year,
out for the year with that, and looking in and really like in pain, and also like you could tell that like Shimizu came out in the post match angle coming out of this cork and after the Dreamgate match, and he looked like he was holding back tears too. So like it was a very tough kind of appearance for him, but he was clearly going to be out of the cage. Bunch of changes.
Well, we're throwing a lot of things out there. Let's stop for one second. Right. Let's start at the top here. What do you make of the attendance for this show? Because it's another show where they barely clear 1,000 people in Cork and Hall.
I mean, 1,088, like, given like the things that are drawing into this building, it feels like to me that there's the promotions that will draw in Cork into a certain level, and then the promotions that will sell out Cork in right now. Like, Noah will sell out Cork in at this point. And New Japan, you know, it's situational, but New Japan like ends up with like about 1,000 or so like this. And it's not dissimilar to Dragon Gate. Stardom is up and down with their Korkins, and especially like there are some ones that I've seen that have had like this around this kind of attendance as well. So I just kind of wonder if there is a ceiling for Dragon Gate in Tokyo, or at least in this building right now. Because I feel like the last three shows have been about at this attendance level, if not a little bit higher or lower, give or take.
It's very tricky because the January show did as well as it did. But I think back to, I feel like this shift happened somewhere around 2024 when they really started to load up some of these Korakuen shows with either a Dreamgate match or multiple title matches far more often than I think they ever have in their history. You know, certainly more than they did in the days of Toriumon. I mean, I can obviously remember UWA World Trios matches, but I'm off the top of my head struggling to think of if they ever did when the main singles title was the Michinoku Pro British Commonwealth title. I'm trying to think if there was ever one of those matches in Cork, and I'm sure there was, but it's not coming to mind. And then once they shifted to the UDG belt, there were a few title matches there in Cork, but not many. And as you go throughout their history, you know, I always found the impressive thing about Dragon Gate to be that they've drawn so well on this building by giving away so little. You know, there was a point in time where a main event Twin Gate match in Cork and felt like a monstrous deal, or a main event Triangle Gate match in Cork and felt like a monstrous deal. And then, you know, the Dream Gate matches throughout that sellout stretch, you know, if you want to look at 2012 to 2018, I mean, you would have some of your lower level Shima opponents, you know, Shima versus Kness happening in this building. You went through the stretch of Shingo versus Yamato, Yamato versus Saito, Yamato versus Yoshino. And then after that, you know, there's a Ricochet versus Uha Nation match in there. BB Hulk, I think, defended the title one time in Cork and officially, and then had that handicap match also where the belt went vacant after that match. But you know, throughout the time when they were packing 1850 into the building with advanced sellouts more often than not, the point that I think made Dragon Gate a stronger promotion than, say, the bigger houses that Noah would do at that time, or the bigger houses that All Japan or even DDT would do at the time, is you would look at the Dragon Gate cards and it wouldn't be title matches. It would be storyline progression and multi-man matches. And that seemed to change a few years ago. And I thought when that change occurred, oh, they would go back to selling the maximum allotment of tickets, whether that be 1,400 or 1,500, whatever that capacity would be. And it just hasn't happened. And I find that to be very strange. And I don't really know why that is or what the explanation behind that is, other than that these guys aren't over to the degree that they need to be. But even for a weak Dreamgate match, which we'll talk about, you know, the build to it being weak, as have been most of the Kakuta Dreamgate matches up to this point, a weak build for a Dreamgate match, but a Dreamgate match nonetheless, and a Class of 2016 tag match that to me was the real draw of this show. And to be at this number, you know, it's sort of like we were talking about in COVID times, where sometimes you and I would grind our teeth over, you know, a company that did, a you know, 1,000 in the building compared to 800. But when your margins are this thin, I feel like those 200 people really matter. And even as we shift in this post-COVID Japanese wrestling economy and we try to make sense of what is somewhat of a new normal, 1,000 fans in Korakuen for a Dream Game match is just a very bad look to me.
Yeah, and I think also, like, the way that they treated the building changed a lot when they with the schedule changes in Osaka, not necessarily, like, getting into the big building for the last few years, and then the situation in Nagoya, and then the fact that last year there was that long stretch that Korakuen was the biggest building that they were that they were booking, and so that you would have to have programs lead to, like, the big match being in Korakuen, like, basically up until, like, that doubleheader in Osaka, it felt like everything was devoted around maximizing Korakuen Hall. So the fact that now that there is, like, yes, this was a Dreamgate match in the building. Yes, this was the 10th anniversary match there as well. I wonder if there is, like, emphasis fatigue in a way. And then similarly, like, it's...
Well, wait, hold on. What do you mean by emphasis fatigue?
I mean, like, this is a building that they essentially would have to treat as, like, the number one building when they would normally in past years wouldn't have last year. So, like, things that were, like, it felt like every month we're getting title matches. And if not one, multiple from that stretch, at least to me last year. And I wonder if that kind of booking, and then going back to this one being outside the Dreamgate match, much more of a storytelling kind of show, that there could be a little bit of, like, an elasticity to it, if that makes sense. But I also, like, optics aren't good with Dragon Gate right now. And optics haven't been good. And I've been thinking that for a while, that all of the kind of gossip and bad press, it hurts at the box office at a certain level. And I feel like that there was, like, an odd kind of tenor to the show in a certain kind of way. And I could see how that's not necessarily appealing.
You know, when the OWE split happened in 2018, and that still has, you know, it's just a seismically different category than the Dragon Dia departure is. But when the OWE split happened, it was right before the King of Gate Korakuen show in May. And I wonder if this company would benefit going back to King of Gate being in May, or maybe Rey de Parejas being in May. It feels like we're due for a tournament here that we're not getting, and it feels like there's a void that could very easily fill, and they're making a very odd decision not to do it right now. But, you know, that show began with all the King of Gate competitors coming out to the ring, and Yamato doing, as he's now done on Twitter so many times, but this being in front of a Korakuen Hall crowd, you know, doing a rally cry promo, doing a "this is Dragon Gate, you know, this is going to be our home, we're not going anywhere" type promo. And not that they needed to do that for Dragon Daya's departure. I think that would have been actually quite odd and maybe concerning had they done something similar with a very obvious directed promo towards the situation without directly referencing it. I do wonder, and this is one of the real cruxes of Dragon Gate this year, is there's so much heat, and there are so many shows with unhappy endings, and there's so much Gaja Dokuro. I wonder if it was a mistake to maybe have a show that had this level of heaviness, and I don't know what exactly I would have altered. I think Tanaka versus Junior, had that taken place, you know, Junior got pulled off the show due to an injury, I think that would have been a very healthy way to start this show, in a way that would have maybe eased my nerves about the future and what it holds for Dragon Gate. But do you find it all odd that they booked the show they did coming off of the Dia departure and some real heat on the company seemingly for the first time in a while?
It in some ways feels like, okay, Dragon Gate kind of going to what they would be doing at this time and turning up the heat a little bit more. Like, let's be honest, at this point in the calendar year, this April Korakuen is the, in a lot of times, if we would probably go back, and I am just doing this off my memory, so if someone was to go and say, like, well, you're probably not off on this, I would understand. But I feel like that these later spring or mid-spring Korakuens right before Aichi always are kind of a let's do the last shuffling of the chairs before we get to the cage match. Like, and then by the end of Korakuen, you always generally would have, like, this is the Aichi cage match. This is, we've raised the stakes to, like, this kind of level. And I mean, I think there's a through line to aid to this Corkin from Monday and those previous years go home to what was Dead or Alive, but now I'm just going to refer to it as the Aichi Big Show and the cage match. Like, I feel like that there was a commonality there, but there also was a good bit of the show that was built towards just that one kind of payoff in that match in the main event and building up to that one main event match, because essentially a lot of this card was already made. And yes, you do have like the four-way tag match that builds up both the Twin Gate and the All Asia tag, but UT has a really bad back injury that he's been off shows and will be off shows for the next 3 weeks. So Tanaka is even more adrift, not just for the fact that Mochizuki Jr. wasn't there. There was nothing he could do to build up his match going up against the hometown guy in Nagoya. And I feel like that's a little bit unmooring. A Triangle Gate match was made kind of backstage, and that also kind of in some kinds of ways makes it, again, feels like something that would happen on this show that didn't necessarily happen in time, and made like that title situation feel a little bit unmoored when really, like, if you didn't already know the Triangle Gate match was made, case you would come out of the show and you'd be like, well, Gucci basically put Paradox into their place now. That there's no direct challenge here. I wonder who is going to face them for the Triangle Gate. And you'd find out later on that it's Takashi, Mondai Ryu, and Koji Iwamoto coming in for it. And I think that the fact that that wasn't in front of the audience hurts a little bit and makes it feel a bit more dismoored too.
I'll table my thoughts on the Triangle Gate match for later. I'm not amused by what Dragon Gate did. I have a lot of thoughts, but I don't want to get into them right now.
But you get what I'm saying about like the fact that like you could only do cage match stuff on this show made this feel different.
No,
you don't have
to only do cage match stuff. You could, and I get what you're saying, but you could have Kame and Rita and Susumu and Yokosuka do something far more interesting than what they did. You could not force me to watch 2026 Genki Horiguchi in a high leverage position. You could not book the Triangle Gate match that you did and literally do anything else. And I do think the one positive away from the cage match stuff here is that when we went back, so God, when was it? I guess it was last month when we were talking about Shima and Magnum, and we were going back and watching some of those Shima matches. Maybe that was 2 months ago. But I made the point about Team Veteran Returns and how I got such a kick out of that Millennials feud and how it felt like we were really wasting Paradox by just having Paradox existing. And there's still a lot of things that I would like to tweak about that unit. I do think we have now officially developed a Gucci versus Yamato feud that really works. And that makes me feel hopeful about the future. And I think the Gucci presentation has just been perfect. I would not change any of that. But it is sort of a deal where, yes, even with all the injuries and even with a really thin roster right now, ultimately, you book this shit. And so you have to figure out a way to have an 8-match Corkin show that has things going on outside of just the one angle for the upcoming big show. I think Dragon Gate at their best would figure out a way to have other things going on than what they had going on this show.
Yeah, and I feel like that, and also in like it's like same way, just big picture wise, you have the cage match stuff. The Dream Gate thing kind of feels like it happens just so it's like we made a Dream Gate match, so the Dream Gate match happened. And that kind of just was like its own kind of thing that happened with it. But
I get the impression that was supposed to be Kakuta versus Shimizu, which had it been, I think the match would have been a little bit hotter. I think our intrigue would have been a little bit higher. And that is one of those deals where you do have to roll with the punches on that one, in the same way that, you know, they announced UT versus Tanaka rather early, mind you, for a big show. And then as soon as they announce it, UT gets hurt. And I understand those are the cards that are dealt and that sucks. But as you were saying.
But like you have so like because the fact that Shimizu is not involved in like directly like into like the cage match kind of things, this Dream Gate match is a little on the island. And as good as the class of 2016 10th anniversary tag match was, it did feel like at a certain way like they did it so that they could have done it, and then everyone's kind of moving on at like right afterwards, and it in some way it did not feel like it had the level of, I don't know if I want to say importance afterwards, Case, but like after like sitting down with the match and sitting down with the show and going through it, there's a part of me that goes like, I don't know if like, yes, if you were just doing this being like the four guys involved in this kind of match, like this is how you would kind of do it. But I'm left with a little bit of longing coming out of that match. And then, you know, like Shun immediately just goes like, all right, Hyo and Yoshioka, you two guys suck. Ben, you're okay. I'm out of here. And it's like, oh, why were we even devoting time to this in a way, like other than having a great match? And those were the kind of things that I don't feel like Dragon Gate had the issue of 6-7 years ago.
No, I think if that class of 2016 match happens 10 years ago and it's a tag match celebrating the class of 2006, and let's say it's still those four guys, we just have a time machine to move everything back 10 years. I don't think there's any question that the presentation of that match would have been far grander, and it would have felt like a really big deal, and the pageantry just would have been at a level, even in a Corkin setting, that would have made this feel really monumental. And I think Jay did all that he could on commentary to try to remind people that you've got your original class of Shingo, Hulk, Tozawa, and you know, technically Yuki Ono, but the only argument that could be made with the Dragon Gate proper guys is that class in comparison to 2016. And again, the more that I sit and think about it, I really think Shun, Ben, Yoshioka, Hyo really rival Shima, Magnum, Dragon Kid, Fuji, Suwa in a way that I'm not sure a lot of people are necessarily ready to have that conversation or want to have that conversation. They might laugh at the idea of it, but I really think that class of 2016 is really close to that original class. And I don't think you got that just from, you know, not to sound like a Uso fan, but I don't think you got that from the entrances alone. I think those, you know, if you had a tag match in 2007, let's say Suwa sticks around, and you're doing Shima and Fuji versus Suwa and Dragon Kid, they're going to make that match feel monumental at a 2007 Dragon Gate Corkin show, and this match just lacked all of that.
Yeah, and it's not like a thing that I think you like can immediately put the finger on the wrestlers themselves. You can't really put it, I mean I guess you can put it on the promotion itself, to be fair.
You but have to, like,
yeah,
but I think like, I think that's exactly what you have to do,
because at like it felt going in, and especially with the way it was built up, like the one like takeaway I had last week was like, damn, could they be finally like teasing the long hurting Hyo fans, and maybe like teasing us with the idea of maybe Hyo is going to go on a run here and get a Dreamgate challenge. And no, it just kind of was calm. Yuki Yoshioka comes out there, he doesn't really engage much in the reindeer games that Shun and Ben are willing to kind of flashback to, and then he wins the match with a high five flow, and we just kind of move on, and it's like on to the next one.
Indeed, I don't understand where we're at with Shun Skywalker. Maybe we'll get some clarity after Golden Coliseum. Let's start with the Dreamgate match, the fallout there, and then we'll work our way back down the card.
Yeah, let's do so. So for the Open the Dreamgate Championship set up at the Gaja Dokuro Produce Show, Madoka Kakuta makes his fifth defense against Kai. He gets him with a final rolling lariat in a match that, like, I think I liked this title defense, Case, a good deal, but it did definitely in some ways does kind of like beg the question of, this was a match where Madoka Kakuta essentially was on the back foot and was selling his hip throughout the match. And it was Kai kind of picking away and getting the advantage in that way. And it makes me kind of wonder, like, why has like no one else in these title matches made that an aspect of Kakuta to kind of take down and grind out? Because I felt like that made this match a lot more interesting than most of Madoka Kakuta's title defenses.
I remain fascinated by the way that they have booked this Kakuta reign, in which he has only wrestled heavyweights for this title. You know, let me see if I can remember in order. It was Ben, Valletta, and then Yoshioka, and now Kai. And one of the points I made when Daya was around was I was like, God, I really wish we could get a Kakuta versus Daya match because I think their chemistry is so strong. And I think Kakuta does his best work against guys that are much smaller than him. And they have only paired him up with the guys on the roster that are of his size. And I find that to be bizarre amongst the other ways that Kakuta has been presented over the course of the last 9 months or so that I just inherently disagree with. But Mike, I have bad news for the haters and losers of the world. Kai, okay. Kai was just phenomenal in this match.
He was so good.
Kai's Dreamgate history, just for those that don't know, Final Gate 2021 against Yamato, 3¾ stars. Truth Gate 2022 against Takashi Yoshida, not his fault, 2¾ stars. Champion Gate in Osaka, Night 2, 2022, 4¼ stars versus Big Boss Shimizu. Dead or Alive 2022, 4¾ stars versus Susumu Yokosuka. One of the best matches in the history of the Open the Dreamgate Championship. Shuji Kondo, Hopeful Gate, July 2022. This was en route to being a notebook match before Dragon Gate booked one of the worst angles in the history of the company to disrupt the finish. And then Kobe World 2022, Night 2, 4 stars versus Yuki Yoshioka. He's delivered repeatedly in the Dream Gate scenario. This match I would have at 4¼, and I would have it at 4¼ not because of anything Madoka Kakuta did, but because I thought Kai was absolutely phenomenal in this match.
I was 4 flat on this. The one aspect I'll say, like, there was a lot of Gacha Dokuro getting involved towards it, and the only time that I really kind of enjoyed it when they're like, hey, someone's calling for chairs, we're throwing the chairs into the ring and then throwing the hands up, like the box attack and powder drink attacks towards the end. I was just going like, why really would Ishin and Minoru get kind of involved with that? And that did take it down a little bit for me with it. But Kai just like absolutely picking him apart, going high on the Mudoism, just going for the hip attack cells. He does a big dragon screw on the apron. And the way that Kakuta gets back into it is Kai, who has popped his top off in celebration, and seeing his chest and realizing, oh, I could really make mess of Kai's chest, and giving probably some of the most devastatingly loud like chops that I feel like I had heard in a long time. And the fact that that was Kakuta's offense for a good portion of this match going towards the closing stretch, where he kind of had to power through his hip, and after eating like an absolute beating of like a medium impact Kai from the top rope onto chairs, doing a rolling lariat after two shining wizards, and finally being able to kind of persevere and do this, I think Kai dragged this match out of Kakuta, and I think this is either this or the Johnny Valletta matches are the my favorite matches of this Dreamgate run. But almost all of this it's all me saying Kai was great and drug Kakuta to that kind of match.
Well, it's the strange thing about this Kakuta reign is that it almost mirrors, say, the basketball career of Karl Malone, where if you look at Malone's box scores and you look at the way that his stats look on the back of a basketball card, you would go, wow, this is one of the great players in NBA history. We should honor Karl Malone far more than we actually do as a basketball player. And the Kakuta thing, it's like, well, you know, I had the Ben match as a notebook match, and the Valletta match was really good. And, you know, when you think about it, a lot of these Dreamgate matches have gotten to 4 stars. Oh, he had the Susumu match in there, too. I knew I was forgetting one. It was Ben, Susumu, Valletta. You know, the Ben match was a notebook match. The Susumu match was a notebook match. The Valletta match was really good. I don't think he and Yoshioka have great chemistry with one another, but, you know, they tried really hard. And so when you look at it just from a star rating perspective, especially when you factor in this Kai match, you're like, oh, well, this is a pretty good Dreamgate reign. You know, I would take this if it was a Yamato run or a Shun run. I think we'd be in business. But all of these Kakuta matches, with the exception of the Valletta match, which had nothing to do with Kakuta whatsoever, all of these matches have just had such horrific build, and they've had to overcome so much in the work of the matches to get me to care even slightly. And then when you go back and really analyze the performances, in October we were talking about how great Ben was, in November we were talking about how great Susumu was, in December we were talking about how great Valletta was. You and I, really liked the closing stretch and the effort that Yoshioka was putting in February. So even when you get to these great matches, he's so clearly not a great champion. And as this reign goes along, and I continue to be baffled by the fact that it existed beyond Uno Dos Tres in February, perhaps Shimizu was supposed to win the Dreamgate belt here. That would not surprise me if one day that was revealed to be the plan here. And so they kept him on in February when they thought they were going to have Shimizu at this point in the calendar year. But yeah, I mean, this is entirely a Kai match. I mean, Kai, I thought was brilliantly charismatic. I thought his flash pins were excellent. I thought he was busting out some of the better dragon screws in all of wrestling. I have some issues with the final few minutes of the match and just the way that it was laid out, but that sort of falls into a stylistic thing where they just veered into a territory that I don't really like. But Kai on the whole, I thought was great in this match. And once again, I thought Kakuta was just kind of there.
Yeah, and I have to say that credit to Kakuta, I did appreciate the way he kind of sold the hip after the amount of work that Kai put in on him with it. But it did kind of, at a certain point, it was like, oh, should the hip attacks really be, should he really be going with the hip attacks? And he does like the over the shoulder or the over the thigh pile driver. I'm like, wouldn't that like be out of the repertoire with the amount of work that Kai has done? So it was kind of like a hit and miss for me with him for that.
Yeah, I think that's just the way that it is with Kakuta. You know, I personally did not like that stretch where they did the medial impact off the middle rope onto the pile of chairs. I like that they sold that move as much as they did, but I inherently am going to push back on Kai never goes for a pinfall attempt after that move. Instead, he hits a lariat and then a thunder firebomb, and that gets a kick out, and then a medial impact with no chairs and not from the middle rope, and that gets a kick out. And to me, that feels a little bit foolish just to be in that spot where you do a big spot with the weapons. There's no kick out from that, and then you start going back to regular moves that don't work as well. I for some reason, I was really hung up on that as we went into the closing stretch. I do like the dueling headbutt spots they were doing. I thought that was really clever. I thought those looked really good. And then you start veering into some Gaja Dokuro stuff, which, you know, I didn't particularly like. Although I do think Minoru had a very good show. Minoru blowing the water, spitting the water into Kakuta's face, which led to a Ganosuke clutch attempt. Kakuta rolled through, hit a hip attack. And then from there, Kai popped back up, ate a second hip attack. And then we had Kakuta's finishing stretch, which puts this match at 4.25 for me. Because again, I thought that was really well done. But it was a Kai performance in the same way that I think some of the other great Dreamgate matches that he's been involved with have very much been led on by Kai.
Yep, I'm with you on that. And then we get into the post-match, which was the kind of the summation of the cage match build. I'm going to bounce us back to Kota Minoura and Yoshiki Kato versus Hamare and El Cielo happening earlier on the card. This was Sapatra jumping the entrance and brawling all throughout, an immediate DQ with a cookie sheet attack, and it continues to break down. Hamare cuts out probably the largest hunk of hair I've ever seen in a hair match build. Like, it was a distressing amount of hair that he just lopped off with it. Big giant pull apart. Ryo Saito stands around for a little bit and they pull apart a couple more times. Then Ryo Saito finally does. And he announces that the two of them are now into the cage match. So going into the main event, we knew that the cage match had six people in it. Hamare, Cielo, Shun Skywalker, Kota Minoura, Yoshiki Kato, and Big Boss Shimizu. So with that all in mind, KS, jumping back to the main event post-match, basically the Gacha Dokuro does, hey, we're all on the same page. If it was going to be one of us, if one of us has to be Dreamgate champion, then it has to be a Kakuta. Kakuta cuts his same promo he's been cutting since the heel turn. And right as he's about to do his final line, Shun Skywalker interrupts the show close, bringing out all of Sipatra. Kakuta then steps in. And I'm sorry, before that, Shun essentially calls out Shimizu. Shimizu comes out with a full leg cast on crutches. He is barely mobile. He gets into the ring and And Shun puts out a chair and tells him to sit down in the chair and get your haircut, because clearly you're not going to be in the match here until Kakuta steps in. He says, "I will step in for Shimizu." And that makes Shun apoplectic because Kakuta has no hair. And with this, Ryo Saito gets into the fray again one last time. It's going to be Shun Skywalker versus Madoka Kakuta versus Homare versus Kota Minoru versus Yoshiki Kato versus El Cielo, Mascara contra Caballera. If Kakuta loses, it will be Shimizu's hair being cut. So we have the hostage gimmick working in there with that. And on top of the mask and hair stipulation, the losing unit, the loser of the match, their unit must disband. Hamare offers up Saipatra to make this match kind of that part of the stipulation done. And Shun Skywalker storms out at both Hamare and El Cielo agreeing with the stipulation. So coming out all of this, our main event of Golden Coliseum, Mascara contra Caballera, Steel Carriage Warfare, six-way, Hamare, Shun Skywalker, Kota Minoru, Madoka Kakuta, El Cielo, and Yoshiki Kato. If Kakuta loses, Shimizu loses his hair, and the loser's unit will disband coming out of Aichi on the 28th.
I have made my thoughts very clear, which are that I struggle to come up with thoughts on the fallout of the Golden Coliseum cage match at this point. Where are you at with the shakeup in this match? Do you have a prediction 3 weeks out from the show?
Man, like, it feels like the Saipatra is getting old Yellard, which I think isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I can't think that they're going to unmask Shun here, but it feels like they're setting up
that feels
Shun
like
betrayal.
The least likely of the options.
But it does feel like Hamare is going to get himself into a situation where it does feel like that Shun will finally stick his head out, and maybe Hamare turns and goes back to Gajadokoro. You know, I mean, like, it does kind of feel like that for a unit that was completely in his image and people that he picked, like Saipatra, is for like the first time not on the same page with Shun Skywalker. And I wonder, at least coming out of Cork, and that's the thing that's a little bit into my mind, but it feels like to me Hamare is getting a haircut. Like, that seems like the obvious thing.
I think as you go through the list of participants in this match, you know, I don't think anything is going to happen to Shun. I think the angle of Kakuta costing Shimizu his hair is really interesting, but because we know we're not going to see Shimizu for the rest of the year, I'm not sure there's a way you can follow up on that. Cielo, I don't know. I find Cielo as Cielo far more of a marketable star than TN Revolution at this point, just because he was only around for such a short glimpse of time. And I think if you weren't watching Dragon Gate during that 1 month, if he unmasks and just becomes another guy, if you know he goes back to TNR, I mean, that's cool for the people that know him, but I would say an overwhelming majority of the audience at this point probably knows him as El Cielo more than TNR, so I would keep him there. I think this comes down to Kato or Minoru losing their hair, because you still have the ongoing issue between Minoru and Ishin, as well as the stuff between Hamare and Minoru. I think those guys are probably the last two in the cage. And it wouldn't shock me at all if Ishin turns on Minoru, turns him face, Hamare comes out of the cage, Minoru loses his hair. I think the thing that I'm leaning towards right now, and I will likely change this opinion as we go along, although, again, I've had a really hard time getting any sort of feel for this match and how it's going to play out. I think there's a very strong chance that at the end of this match, we have no Saipatra and no Gajadokoro, and I could see them blowing both units up at the end of this.
Yeah, I like the idea of the fact that, like, let's be honest, D-Courage is as awkward as a question of his existence coming out of the Cork and as it was going into it. It does feel like, hey, you could very quickly, I don't know if I would say, like, blow up everything, and then we're kind of like looking at brand new stakes going into May, but it does feel like that you could really have like a situation where what happens if like Menorah, like something happens with Menorah and he loses the match for Gaja Dokuro, and you know that that then they look towards the Menorah face turn and never giving up on that. Like there's a lot of just chaos options that I feel like that adding the disband kind of lethal ejection kind of punishment to this, it gives you that option. And I do have to say, we have been very down on him, rightfully, I feel like, with his booking over the last in some ways since July, but having this now be like the bow of the Shun Skywalker end of Z-Brat storyline and have it ending with like a nuclear option cage match does now feel kind of deserved if we pull back to the from like where we are now and then look at everything that's happened since Kobe World of 2025.
Do you think it's too soon for Himari to turn on Skywalker?
I don't. I mean, he's had such a unique trajectory just because of his immediate going into Z-Brats and being treated as like the super rookie that like at a certain point he needs to spread his wings as himself and not as just Shun Skywalker's perfect like boy soldier, right? Like just like taking Himari and looking at him by himself without like the Shun Skywalker entanglement and just like him and like his progression his career, it's about time for him. And I would say that we look at whatever like the next steps are for him. And if that is turning on Skywalker, which would be such a huge thing. And I think like if you think about everything with how the company's been dominated by Skywalker since his return from Excursion, that like in all the ways that he had influenced Pain upon the roster, and the fact that like the one person that he stuck his neck out forever, his like one protege is the one that makes that rips his mask off, I think would be a big kind of thing for Himari. And that's why I brought it up as like that's the thing that kind of gets stuck in my head coming out of the angle, just because that's an awful meaty option that is on the table there, Case.
Yeah, but I don't even necessarily think you're wrong, but doesn't it feel like if Himari turns on Shun, and these guys, you know, they've been linked together since September of 2024, they've been through two units together now, doesn't it just seem like this is representative of a larger issue in Dragon Gate, where if they break up at the end of April, we can look at their time together and go, wow, they did so much. There were so many interesting Shun and Himari tags and Rey de Parejas, and it looked like the Psypatra trio, that Triangle Gate team, was going to be such a special team before they got hurt. And then they got into this program that I don't think you or I are into that much. But like, we're in this era of Shun and Himari's career, and we're not going to have them have a Twin Gate match against Kame and Rita. We're not going to find them another guy to go back to the Triangle Gate scene in. There's no point of having Shun be Himari second for a Himari Dreamgate match. Like the fact that this Kakuta run might end without getting Kakuta versus Himari just seems completely insane to me. But this is a company, and I started talking about this a few months ago, where they are booking right now. I think it's always been an incredibly conservatively booked company, going back to the very beginning. But they are so conservative right now that they are shooting themselves in the foot. And I still feel like, and maybe this is just something that I get hung up on, because I, you know, one of my very early AEW talking points was I thought Cody and MJF broke up about 2 years too early. I would have had those guys have a tag team and a will they won't they tension just until the end of time, until finally MJF snapped on him. And that's the example that I almost use here, where it's like, I'm not done with these guys as a team. I think they're super interesting together. I think the fact that Shun has a friend is super interesting. And I don't agree with the calendar beats that this company hits sometimes, where it's like, well, you've got the cage match, time to have a big turn. I mean, you can do that with Menorah. We can see where the chips lie with, you know, another summer where we we give him a shot, and you know, we'll see how that goes.
Feels like a valid exit out of this is, man, it is time to turn Koza Minoru and give him one last shot.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily what I want. I think I'm a little more open
over
to the
him.
Idea. Well, yeah, I don't know. I think maybe it's the state of the company being where it's at right now, where I'm like, how bad is the summer of Coach Minoru going to hurt us this time around? It's not like we're holding on to anything really precious at this moment in time. But the Shun and Himari stuff, just to put a bow on that, like, I don't know. I feel like they have another year's worth of stories just in this era of their careers before we go anywhere else with them, because ultimately Himari should turn on Shun, and they should have a mask versus hair match at some point, and Shun should cut the guy's hair, and it should be this grandiose thing when it happens. But I would like to see that during the next U.S. presidential election cycle. You know, I don't want that now. They have so many things to do together. It seems like we're once again just at a point where they go small, 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 and then they have this big action, but we're missing other big things that could have been done along the way. And I think it'd be really, really disappointing if Himari turns on Shun at this point in time.
Yeah. I don't disagree with, like, the idea that we don't have, like, year-to-year storytelling like that. And especially in a promotion that sometimes felt like that there was a lot of year-to-year storytelling with it, it does kind of make you not want it to happen. I'm just like when I propose that, I just look at it from Himari's progression, not necessarily like the Shun entanglement of it with it. But it really kind of, in a way, when all of this kind of circling started to happen, like first with CLO and Kato, really dating back since like November, it's interesting how that this cage match, in a lot of ways, it's had a lot of like transmutations on who I thought was probably going to lose the mask or lose their hair at this point. And just from like just in this calendar year alone, and the fact that now I never really take the idea of Shun Skywalker losing his masks like seriously whatsoever, but now I'm starting to entertain the idea of, man, maybe is this the thing to like catapult Himari at this point? I don't know. It's a unmoored promotion who does beats on a calendar that they're doing a lot of things with coming out of this cork and with this.
Well, let's run with the idea that whoever gets turned on in this match, or if you could select somebody from the six guys in this match, and we'll throw Ishin in as the bonus seventh guy. Who do you think benefits most from the big angle that then puts them in the main event of Kobe World? Because that's what we have to assume, is that this match is going to dictate what we get in the middle of July. Who's the guy that you lean on in that situation?
I think the fact that now Kakuta's in the cage, I think it's Minoru now. Like, it kind of like feels like he's starting to cut. Have you noticed that? With like yes, he's like pale and has like and it will have like a buzz haircut with this, and it'll be like his second buzz head in 3 years. But like, it does kind of feel like if we were looking at this through booking eyes pre-2021, right? Doesn't it kind of feel like a way that he's been a heel for a long time, not for like a long time, but for like a good enough time that this isn't like immediate? That it does feel like that if we're looking at it from like a traditionalist perspective, I think the eye would have to go towards Minoru now.
Yes. I mean, to piggyback off of the Himari point I just made, you know, could they do some more Jason Minoru stuff? Yeah, absolutely. But I feel like
you've done enough of that team at this
point.
Yeah,
I agree. You know, I'm always intrigued by them together, but I don't think we're missing out on anything great there. And I'm not sure that if Minoru stays a heel, you know, I'm sure it would be fine to have, you know, a Minoru, Jason, Ishin, Triangle Gate team, let's say, but that doesn't really light my world on fire. I mean, Minoru is due for, I think, a full-on babyface turn, because even, you know, towards the tail end of Gold Class, after he got his head shaved the last time, he was in such an odd place as a character. It's been a very long time since it has been, this is Coach Minoru, everybody let's agree to cheer him all together when there's not a murmur in the crowd when he comes out. So no, I feel like we're just about done there. But then you go back to the like, are we sure Coach Manoah is the guy? And more importantly, are we sure Coach Manoah is the guy against Madoka Kakuta, who I think is proving himself to be a second in command type guy and not a top guy? How do you feel? Let me ask you this directly. How do you feel about Manoah versus Kakuta headlining Kobe World this year?
I don't love it.
I don't love it either.
But like, you're not going back to Yoshioka. Like,
but are we sure they're not going back to Yoshioka? I still think there's a strong chance the main event of Kobe World is Yoshioka versus Kakuta.
I just like, just because like the fact Kakuta's in the cage now, unless you are looking at, okay, you can wrap that up in May, and by the end of the June Korakuen, we can move on to Yoshioka at Kobe World, which, I mean, Kobe World is on the 20th this year. So, I mean, you're going to have another Korakuen in July and like two loops there, right? I think you have the time if you want to, but I also think that that's really compressing the fallout of the cage really quickly.
Well,
just to move on to Yoshioka, I guess. But if he's the ace, then he should be like, I'm the ace. Give me my title shot.
And I think that's what they can very easily do is just, hey, Yuki Yoshioka's here with a microphone. You know, we're gonna do that. And then whatever happens with that fallout of,
but man, he's never been that kind of promo guy.
I know he's not. But they don't have that guy right now. They just did 11.
Chio is that guy. That's the problem.
I know. They don't have that guy because they just did 1100 in the Cork and that had a Dreamgate match on top and a pretty big tag match in semi-main event. But
yeah,
you know, you could very easily get out of this by, okay, Manoah turns on Ishin, and that's your match five on an 8-match Kobe World this year. And whatever that is with, you know, Manoah, Shun, Homari, Cielo, Ishin, and let's say, you know, Kai, Jason, whoever else. I mean, that certainly screams like an upper mid-card program to me and not something that necessarily needs to dominate the focus of the company. I'm not sure if, you know, if we had just kept the belt on Shun for an entire year and it was Saipatra Shun going into Kobe World, maybe then I would be a little bit more confident in a Manoah challenge. You know, if it was Yamato, I would be a little bit more confident in a Manoah challenge. I think if it was Ben at this stage in Ben's career, I'd feel a little bit more confident there. But if we're on this ice cold Madoka Kakuta Dreamgate run and we're going, you know, we're rubbing our hands together backstage and going, Coach Manoah, this is your year. Like, I don't know about that. It's why I can't ignore the idea of Yoshioka being the guy again. I mean, let's look at the roster page really quick and go through, you know, if your Dreamgate champion is Kakuta in July, which there's no guarantee that it is, but let's go under the assumption right now that Kakuta is going to be your Dreamgate champion in July. I think Manoah is a real possibility. Is babyface Kato, does that do anything for you?
I mean, you've got to really believe in that. And I just don't see, like, the popular appeal to him to get there, you know?
Nor do I.
Well, like, I think it's great he's in this cage match and he does feel like that he will get there, right? Like, he's put it together. He stayed off the IL and he has stepped up given, like, the kind of scenarios here, but they're not going to give his first shot at Kobe World and with the amount of support he has right now. And if this was happening maybe a year or two from now, I would more gear towards yes, but I also feel like in that year or two from now he would have already had a Dreamgate shot before, you know.
I do. So Manoah, yes. Babyface Kato, not really. Homare, maybe.
Boy, that would be bold. But
yeah, that would be really bold.
It would be tough for me to say yes to Homare while saying no to Kato when Kato is 6 foot and 100 kilos and almost 30.
Do you run back Kakuta versus Shun?
It would be a maskless Shun probably then in that case, right?
No, I don't. I can't even fathom that scenario. I don't think Shun's losing his mask ever. So I don't think that would be it.
Unless like Shun goes like, I've killed Gaja Dokuro. I have beat you in the cage, Madoka Kakuta. I've made you. You have been worthless in defending Shimizu's hair. Now hand me that belt at Kobe World. I don't know. Like it does. If he didn't win the belt last year at Kobe World, I'd be more on board with it. And if we didn't have how meandering this overall program has been, I would be more up for it.
I agree completely. I mean, you look at Paradox. I don't think there's anybody there. I don't think that's the direction they're going this year.
Just jump in. There's two Korkins in June, just to figure this scent.
God. Okay. We're going to book some shitty matches on those shows. they don't have a deep enough roster right now to do back-to-back Korkins. That is going to be concerning. I am very curious to see what outsiders get brought in on those shows, and I would imagine they loaded up like they did last year with the Brave Gate and the Twin Gate and then a Triangle Gate and the Dream Gate. They do not have the roster for that right now. So I wonder if they do Kakuta versus Himari in June. That feels very plausible. Love and Peace, Ben's already had a shot. I don't think anybody else is going to be there. Paradox, I really hope they're doing just a very straightforward Paradox versus Natural Vibes Triangle Gate match on that show, so Yamato and Gyuchi can do more stuff together. And that leaves you with Yoshioka, and that leaves you with Tanaka. And I feel like it is way more likely that one of those guys is wrestling Kakuta in July over Minoru, over Kato, over Himari, over Shun. But those, to me, are the only options right now.
Yeah, and you have the aspect of, like, okay, you can get to 12 before Kobe World. Now with those Kobes and with those Korkins, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like at that point, be like, I am the best Brave Gate champion. You're not doing clearly Dream versus Brave double title match, but I feel like at that point, he could probably say like, I feel like I should get my shot here. And I don't think that it with like the schedule with that you could get him across the finish line with the Brave Gate and then get him to a Dream Gate match with this. I mean, I'd be interested in Tanaka versus Kakuta. I think there's something there with that.
It's the one that intrigues me the most, and I wasn't even super into it when it first started getting talked about like a month or two ago when Tanaka really seemed to catch fire, but I think that's the match that I would prefer at this point. And I feel like if you're going to make a big deal out of somebody new, that feels like a much safer bet than Kato or Himari at this point. So as we sit here in early April, I am rooting for Tanaka versus Kakuta, and I am fearful for anything else.
Working our way down the card, the semi-main event, the 10th anniversary match, Shun, Skywalker, and Benkei on one side, Hyo and Yuki Yoshioka on the other side. We've talked kind of around this match up until this point, but let's get into the match itself. It was a lot of fun, Case. I really enjoyed it. I liked it a touch more than the main event, but I still feel like that I had this match at 4.25 stars, and I would go like, man, I know that this match could have been like a 4.75 star match, and it kind of, in some points, was trending to that way, but I feel like that it just, not necessarily like the bad vibes across the promotion, but it just did not get across like that match of the year line for me.
Yeah, I had it at 4 flat, and I feel the same way. I feel like everybody liked this match a little bit more than I did. I think the thing that I'm going to take away from this is that it does represent a very interesting flashpoint in the history of the company, where between these four guys, Hyo is consistently doing the best work and is right now the best worker of the bunch, and this is the only time in history you can say that. And I would imagine that if Shun can ever figure out his character again, and, you know, we give Ben something to do at some point, that will change pretty quickly. But it was very interesting to me that this was a match where I thought Hyo looked like a bigger star than everybody else and looked like a better wrestler than everybody else.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I mean, it's, and Jay talked about it a good deal on commentary, and I felt like that, as you mentioned earlier, Jay's, the way that he handled this match was really what kind of sets him apart as how he is as a broadcaster. And the point he brought up was like Shun Skywalker, Benkei, and Yuki Yoshioka, they've all been at the pinnacle. They have a combined 6 Dreamgate title the reigns between the three of them. But unquestionably, if you're talking about like who is the most on fire right now, who is at their peak right now, it is Hiyo. And Hiyo felt like the peak wrestler throughout this match, like to the point that other than the like the fact that like you had a couple glimpses of Terminator Yoshioka, but it felt like that this very much was Hiyo. And then getting to see a whole lot of fun Shun Skywalker and Benkei offense, and enough so there you go, like you blow up Zypatra, it'll be a weird kind of thing, but I do really want to see Shun Skywalker and Benkei versus Jackie Rita. Like that's a match put in my head after watching this one. But this was a match that was for us in a bunch of ways, because we got to see a bunch of Mochizuki Dojo offense, the Groza, which is like one of my favorite moves in Yoshioka's in his overall. He doesn't use, that's like his water wheel face buster downwards move that he does not use anymore, coming out of nowhere, and probably the most amount of Benkei bomb attempts and teases and actual Benkei bombs that I feel like we've seen in like 3 years, which was kind of a fun thing about this match, but it's just could not get to that point for me.
To your point about the Shun and Ben tag team, it's why when I think about, you know, how we're analyzing this promotion in 2026 and what's changed, there is not an issue of talent on this roster still. It's actually, even with all the injuries and even with the departure of Daya, it's still what I would call a loaded roster. But you have almost half of the roster tied up in a program that is doing nobody any favors. And if you hit me with the Men in Black memory eraser tomorrow and just said, you know what, Shimizu got hurt, we're restarting 2026 in the middle of April. Forget everything you've seen before. Shun, you're now teaming with Ben. You guys are a tag team going forward, and we're going to get you a unit to make up for our sins in 2019. This promotion would turn around in a day. It's just, we're just living through a really bad timeline of booking right now. And you're right, that was the thing that jumped out to me, was how do we get Shun and Ben back in the same unit and in a tag team? And then I started wondering, like, well, is that like, you know, Dragon Gate doesn't really, like, I don't know if that would work. Those guys are so big and they're booked so powerfully. And then I thought, well, no, that's fucking stupid. We had Yamato and Naruki Doi as a tag team and they broke a Twin Gate record. There's no reason that Shun and Benkei couldn't do the same exact thing.
Yeah. And I feel like that if the match was like in the service of going, like, think about like, boy, these guys have like that kind of history, we got that feeling from that side. Whereas like, I really was, and maybe it was because the kind of unit Mochizuki Dojo was in the time of their career, especially for like Yoshioka, who wasn't really well-defined until the Inferno run, to be quite fair for him. It felt like that, like this was like the fun, interesting matchup to make between the four of them. But it did kind of end up like having one side, the dreams kind of go off to the races, and the other side go like, you know, Yoshioka doesn't need to join Love and Peace if D-Courage goes away. Like, there's not much there.
No, I would agree with that.
The pre-intermission match was the four-way tag, the Open the Twin Gate champions, Jackie Kamei and Rita, the All-Asia tag team champions, Masaki Mochizuki and Don Fuji, the Soryo tag team champions, Sumi Yokosuka and Kaga Tora, and the number one contenders to the All-Japan tag team titles, Yuzushi Kanda and Ginki Horiguchi. It was a backslide times from Ginki Horiguchi on Kamei in a match that Ginki Horiguchi, other than chomping Don Fuji, did nothing but the backslide for. And that was this four-way match.
I'm over it. I don't like this Ginki stuff at all. I thought they were really pushing it with the Brave Gate match, and I find his inclusion into anything else that's relevant. And look, this is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I mean, this is a guy that at one point I lobbied to be one of the 100 greatest wrestlers ever. And I find him to be a brilliant mind and really at his peak, a really, really underrated and underappreciated wrestler. But I have zero desire to see him do anything important anymore. And I just can't believe that we're now staring down the barrel of another Ginki Horiguchi title match, even if it's for the All-Asia belts and even if it's in Fukuoka. I get it. It's not exactly him going for the Dream Gate, but I'm still so bothered by the idea, when you could have done something really interesting with Susumu and Kagatora and Kame and Rita, because it's clear that the chemistry is there, and my expectations for that match are in the same way they were for Jason and Jackie versus Shun and Monte in 2022, my expectations are completely unfair, and yet I get the feeling that they might surpass them. But it was bogged down by stuff that I just didn't want. Like, I have zero investment in this All Asia stuff now. I thought it was fun when it was Mochi Fuji versus Ishin and Kato. I'm not really enjoying it after that now.
Yeah, yeah. I the All Asia tag thing, I was intrigued by the idea of, okay, old man tag team wrestling, and then, like, let's have some, like, Dragon Gate guys, like, go up against Mochi Fuji. And instead, it was just kind of doing a lot of old man tag team wrestling. And if they weren't going to do the all, if the All Asia Junior Tag Tournament wasn't going to end up with, like, Mochizuki Jr. and Ryo Inoue challenging and getting the belts back, and then, like, working the belts back into All Japan in that way, I don't know how or why the belts are sticking around, you know, at this point.
No, I don't get it. You know, I think Mochizuki still has a lot left in the tank, and I think he can still go and do interesting things and be in big matches, but I'm not sure that this is the thing that I want to see from him. And I certainly, you know, this was the point that I made last month. It's funny the way that things change, because the point that I made last month was, I went, okay, things are not looking good right now, but if you compare them to 2018, you can see just how weak those 2018 cards were and how depleted that roster was, because you had Kanda in big matches and you had Punch in big matches. And, you know, this is the tail end of Kotoka's career, but you would have Kotoka doing some stuff here and there. Just guys that were being pushed one roster rung above where they felt, or sometimes two, you know, with a lot of Cyber Kong. And I went, well, you know, until we see that, I don't have a ton of reason to be concerned. And then we have Khan in a title match, and we have Punch in a title match, and we have Takashi Yoshida in a title match. And it's inexcusable. It's inexcusable when Luis Monte is not in a unit and hasn't been for over a year now. It's inexcusable to book the matches that they're booking with the guys that they're booking in relevant positions when Monte continues to do nothing. And this Genki and Kondo stuff is bad. I have no interest in it. And I don't think that at this point, for as much as I love him, God bless him, one of my all-time favorites, Don Fuji's being pushed to his limit, and I'm not sure how many more of these All Asia tags I can watch and go, oh, well, that was kind of fun for it was, just because before it becomes a title reign that overstays its welcome.
Yeah, no, I'm about at that point with you there. You talked about the Gaja Dokuro versus Saipatra tag. So the next one was Natural Vibes Atomico versus Paradox, Strong Machine J, KZ, Gucci, and Aki versus Yamato, Dragon Kid, Naruki Doi, and BB Hulk. Yanagiuchi and Aki have themselves a day of getting their ass kicked by Yamato and Doi throughout this match, but is Gucci getting the Nakadora on Hulk to get the win here in a match that, you know, I thought that, for as frustrating as some of the things were on the card, the progression that we've seen from Gucci and especially Aki since turning to the Natural Vibes is some of the more encouraging things to see in this promotion. And I just love the fact that Naruki Doi was like, oh, Yamato's being up on Gucci? Okay, I'm going to Super Dragon Aki a lot. And that just kind of made me start cackling in my seat watching this match.
If I had the pencil, I would be booking Yamato and Doi versus Gucci and Aki next month in Cork and Hall. That, to me, just feels like the most obvious follow-up to this. And I know it's not going to happen and it's going to bug me, but that is an opening match 15-minute time limit draw if there ever was one.
And we'll measure the match by the amount of bloody noses we have.
Gucci's unbelievable, man. That guy, and it's, you know, it's a victory lap that I'm going to be happy to continue taking, because it was 1 year ago. It was April 2025 when he had the Brave Gate match against Yamato. And I loved that match for what it was, and I loved the fallout of it. And I felt like after that match, it was like, oh, they're gonna finally do something with this kid. I've always really liked his potential. I like the way that he moves around the ring. It's just a matter of whether or not he can actually have something to do. And then they put him on ice after that again, and I was so confused by that. And I think that next incarnation of Mochizuki Dojo that came is something that, you know, was already so much in the back of my mind, and it'll just become a cage match oddity where, you know, a few years from now, you and I will go, oh, do you remember that they did another Mochizuki Dojo? I don't really think it had any sort of lasting impact or legacy, but to see him step into Vibes the way that he has, I mean, this is, again, to draw comparisons to 2018, you and I would send texts back and forth and go, imagine where this company would be without Maximum in 2017 and 2018. Mike, imagine 2026 without Natural Vibes if they hadn't hit the refresh button at the start of the year.
Yeah, and if like Natural Vibes, like the way that they hit that refresh and you had that Shimizu week, like it's probably the unit of the year, to be quite honest.
I don't think it's close. I mean, Love and Peace just aren't provided with the opportunities. I feel like Natural Vibes have had more big matches this year, despite the fact that we entered the calendar year with Love and Peace holding two sets of titles. And, you know, a complaint for a different day, but Vibes feel way more integral to the fiber of this promotion than Love and Peace does right now, which I think is why they're only drawing 1,000 fans at Korakuen, but I digress.
No, I'm totally with you on it. But yeah, this was an absolute blast of a undercard 8-man tag. Like, these are the things, like, if the rest of the undercard was stuff like this, we would probably feel a lot less on board about this show. Because this felt like Dragon Gate.
If the show was good, I would like it. I agree. Yeah.
So
you know what I did? I got to mention this really quick because nobody's really doing this move in wrestling right now. Right before the finish, Aki did that leaping crossbody just off the ropes and just, you know,
The flying burrito. Yeah.
Yeah, just jumped into Yamato. I thought that looked great. What a great move for him. Again, it's right there. Next Korakuen opening match would be Yamadoi versus Gucci and Aki. If you don't want Gucci to beat him, I understand. Have him go to a 15-minute time limit draw. But like it kind of, and this is a longstanding issue that isn't necessarily reflective of a 2026 Dragon Gate issue, but just something that is always confused me about the promotion from about 2016 or 17 onwards, is just the way that they do the booking of the Triangle Gate belts, where it feels a lot like an afterthought. And I do feel like we are building towards what could be a really special Triangle Gate match at Kobe World between Vibes and Paradox. And I'm just not sure we're going to get it, or there's going to be another team involved because they want to fit more guys on the show. And it's just going to gum up the works. But, you know,
Owashi needs booked. Yeah.
Or Owashi needs booked. And so you do Owashi, Kondo, and Sugawara, you throw them in there and it's a 9-man match all of a sudden. But
Mitra Wright can come back, though. You know, like I was happy with him this week. He could be in that match.
Of course. He could be in an opening match battle royal too. And I think he would fit in there fine. You know, if you really committed yourself to KZ, Gucci, and Aki versus Yamato Doi, and if you want it to be Hulk or you want it to be Dragon Kid, whatever it may be, and you had us just building anticipation from now until Kobe, I mean, I think that would be a drawing match. I think you could put that in a post intermission spot or the match right before intermission. I think it would feel humongous, and I just know they're not going to do that. And it's very odd to me because you have this Triangle Gate team, much like the last one with Ben and Junior and Hyo, where it's like, man, like these guys have something. This is an above average chemistry group. Let's run with this. Let's see what they can do. And I know that's not going to be how they handle this.
Yeah. And we go down the card with talking about things that just kind of went on for a long time. Ultimo, Monte doing nothing, and Punch No Managa versus Toru Washi, Takashi, and Mondai Ryu. Sickeningly hot crowd, a lot of Kamada and Ultimo in this. And speaking of Kamada, he wins with the problem on PT, the first time that he has won with that move, probably since the Over Generation days. And that was the thing that propelled to the absurd Triangle Gate match happening in Aichi.
So I'm in the process of writing my written review. And when I started writing the review, I thought this match was booked for Golden Coliseum, that Triangle Gate match. And I had this very long paragraph typed up about how I think that's horrible booking. You're not doing anything with Monte. I can't accept this being a title match on a big show, especially against a Triangle Gate team of that caliber. This is horrible. And then I went back and I looked at Jay's Blue Sky post and I was like, oh, they're going to do this in Problem Dragon's homecoming show on April 12th. That's why Iwamoto's there. Oh, okay. And then I deleted the whole thing and I was like, you know what? I don't like this, but it's not going to be televised. Nobody's ever going to see it. Who cares? And then it got confirmed for Golden Coliseum and I lost my fucking mind earlier today. This has to be the worst title match on paper, probably since Kai versus Yoshida in 2022 for the Dreamgate match. I am repulsed that they're doing this on a big show. I think this is abhorrent. And if anybody wants to go, oh, what else are you supposed to do? First of all, you have control over the card. You can do whatever you want. I don't know. Can we do Kimura and Jiro and Fuda, or Kimura and Jiro and Monte, or I don't know, anything other than this? This I cannot accept this as a Triangle Gate match on a big show. This is awful.
Doi has been announced for Golden Coliseum.
Oh my God.
Be having Doi in a Triangle Gate match right now, this month. We don't have to hold off until Kobe World KSA. It could be happening this month if they really...
They could do Yamato, Doi, and Dragon Kid, theoretically, right?
They could have, yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm looking. Yeah, all of those have an open fight card for Aichi.
Well, who are they going to... Oh, is it just going to be Paradox and Love and Peace on the undercard? I mean, who's left?
I mean, that's kind of where we're at this point.
They'll do what? Like Strong Machine J? A bunch of old man tags? Yeah, Strong Machine J, Ultimo, Mochi, Fuji against Paradox?
Yeah, probably.
Oh my God.
Jiro versus X?
Yeah, that's at least fun. I'm into that. I mean, if it were up to me, I'd put Jiro and Kimura and Rey de Parejas tomorrow.
God, let's talk about that.
Have them win some matches. Those guys, that is...
Charming chemistry, though, Sue.
Even when this company doesn't have their fastball, they can still find some magic, let me tell you.
Yeah, and this was the second match on the show. Kazuma Kimura and Jiro Shimbashi versus Ishin and Jason Lee. And Jiro, this was like a step for him because this was his first televised tag match with his class of 2025 partner, and I thought that the chemistry was there. The more kind of we see, like, not necessarily like super serious Jiro, but like he knows when to incorporate his act, when not to, and like breaking Jason, just absolutely destroying the umbrella, got a big pop out of me. This was a bunch of good fun, I thought, like, and you know, Ishin's the right kind of guy for that kind of counterpart for Shimbashi doing a lot of this stuff. But yeah, Kimura and Shimbashi need to be tagging a lot more on these undercards. It's great.
Completely agree. It has the same, it's, you know, obviously very different sets of charisma, but it has the same charm that Yoshiki Kato Kaito Nagano tag team had in Rey de Parejas. Yes. when they brought it back. It's that same, it just, I don't know, it really works. I really like it. And for as wary as I am about Ishin doing comedy, I do think he and Jiro line up perfectly. So for what this was, I thought this was a very fun undercard match.
And then we opened up with Ryoya Tanaka versus Kenichiro Arai in a grimy as hell, just Arai working the arm and shoulder, not being able to be up with the Dragon Gate speed. So he's just really grinding it out. And then Tanaka hitting the cross saber out of nowhere, just going like, I'm done with this guy at this point, and escaping with the Brave Gate to open the show.
Do you know, before this match, the last three Kenichiro Arai Dragon Gate singles matches?
You see, the singles matches are going to make it difficult because there were he would be in match zeros when he was decycled.
Mm-hmm.
So
can you think of the most recent Arakan singles match in Dragon Gate?
I have no idea. Who is it?
Off the top of my head, the last three. Not off the top of my head, but I don't have to look at this because I wrote it in my review. So July 2024 in Kobe, he wrestled Kota Minoura in a singles match. This was maybe the day before Kobe World that year. I have zero recollection of that match. That was a Kobe Art Center show that I just do not remember
that
whatsoever.
That would have been day before Kobe
yeah,
World. Yeah,
I think maybe only Joe Gagné watched that show. I don't think I watched that. And then before that, November 2023, Korakuen against Susumu Yokosuka. I know I reviewed that. Admittedly, I don't remember that either. The third most recent Dragon Gate singles match that Kenichiro Arai had before this was February 4th, 2016 against L. Lindemann.
You see, that was the time frame I was thinking of, to
yeah.
be honest. Yeah.
And that was, do you have Dynamite on your TV?
No. I don't, but
oh my
I've
God.
Seen gifts right now.
Darby just took one of the all-time great Darby bumps. That was one of the greatest things I've ever seen. Oh, my God. He and Mark Davis and Takeshita just launched him into the fucking sun. That was incredible. That completely broke my train of thought about Arkin, which is just that, like, I knew it had been a long time since we had seen him in a singles match. I was not expecting one of his more recent singles matches to be an L Lindemann match, and I really enjoyed running into that on Cage Match.
Yeah, that's so good. The two differences of us put into display, I have the Glate Show from yesterday on.
Oh.
And it's 200 people in first ring.
And yeah, I'm not gonna be watching that.
Guess what guess what the capacity is of the building that they're running for their fifth anniversary show, and that is on my birthday. It's my worst birthday present every year is the Glate anniversary show. Take a guess on the capacity of the building.
God, I don't know where they're running, so I'm just gonna say 1,000 people.
It's a venue that has never held wrestling before, to my knowledge.
I'll go 1,000 people.
5,000.
Well, they're not gonna draw that.
No, they're not gonna draw 1,000, probably.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
But I could deal with more Kenichiro Arai doing this kind of stuff. Like, if Kenichiro Arai was put into the Genki Horiguchi position, and maybe it is the novelty that it's Arakan coming back and into that, but I would have a lot more time for that.
I don't know. I mean, I wrote a lot about this in the review that will hopefully be up Friday morning is kind of when I'm shooting to have that done, but we'll see. It might end up being Monday. I might not be able to get it done tomorrow, but I will say I'm glad that this match happened. I would have much rather seen Tanaka versus Junior, but this was a type of Tanaka match that we hadn't really seen before, and I thought that was fun. I thought him working this match, you know, obviously not a Brave Gate match, but canonically in this time period, I thought that was really interesting. And so I don't think this was great by any means. I thought it was passable at best, but I'm glad that it happened because it gave us a new side of Tanaka that we hadn't seen.
Yeah, no, it was fun to have. And hey, it's always nice to see Kenichiro Arai and get his... the other thing about him not being around as much and doing it any singles matches, we don't get his groovy theme music that often.
We do not get his groovy theme music that often. One final thought on Arakan that is unrelated to this match, but as there's been some greatest wrestler ever discourse popping back up, I just started thinking about the type of people, complimentary, the type of people that do greatest wrestler ever, and with the sort of, I don't know if resurgence is the right word, but the emergence of Kenichiro Arai as like a Japanese indie king over the last few years, there's a very realistic chance that if I don't submit a ballot and if Alan doesn't submit a ballot, that the highest ranking Dragon Gate wrestler, Dragon System wrestler, will be Kenichiro Arai.
Yeah, no, like I could see.
Like that's a real, yeah. Because they're not going to finish at the top 100. There's no, these people, complimentary, these people are not, they weren't grinding Toriyama on tapes in the last 10 years, like I suggested they do for this project. But I know they've been watching Heat Up and Capture and whatever else. So I think there's a realistic chance.
The guy that you DM and you send him like $3 on PayPal.
Yes, the Jintaro Arakan hour-long match, which admittedly I was very curious about but never got around to watching. And like, hey, I say this in all sincerity. If that is your thing, I think that's rad. I also think it is absolutely maddening that we might have a poll that reflects Kenichiro Arai as the greatest Dragon System wrestler of all time, and that's going to bug the shit out of me if that happens. But something to think about.
Now that's... I'm wondering how high he'll go.
he won't be a top 100 guy, but I think there will be people that like will have Arakan in their top 50 that won't vote Mochizuki, Shingo Shima, Yoshino, etc. But yeah, they really like Arakan, which I like him too. I just, you know, I don't know if he's one of the 400 greatest wrestlers ever, let alone one of the 100 greatest wrestlers ever.
Yeah, no. I wonder, like, I'm trying to think of like what random Japanese sleaze wrestler that I'd be very amused by seeing, like getting like a reevaluation because of the Puro Archive channel popping up. Like,
yeah.
Do you think, like, there's a whole lot of Jintaro, like young Jintaro being posted in like Tokyo Pro from the 90s. Is it going to be Yuji Anno getting like a glow up at this point?
Oh, yeah. God, I don't. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it, because there's Big Japan on that channel. And so, I mean, I would really hope that Yoshihiro Sasaki comes around at some point and more mm-hmm. people see his work, because he was absolutely brilliant and had the best match of Sami Callihan's life, which actually isn't a dig on Sami Callihan as much as it's just like Sami Callihan during that era was actually doing a lot of good work, and he happened to do his best work against Sasaki. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a scene that I feel so divorced from right now, just because I'm not watching any sort of Japanese indie scum. And that's never fully been my thing, but it's especially not my thing now. My thing right now is 2001 CMLL. I am in the process. I have watched just about every Ultimo Guerrero match that has made tape from 1998 to mid-2001, and I don't plan on stopping anytime soon. So that is what I'm watching when I'm not watching Dragon Gate or old Michinoku Pro at this point.
Yeah, I am really kind of addicted to that sleaze stuff, but it's never like me really going for like, hell yeah, it's a Kageki Pro as Tekka's facing Liger, let's go. But it's, I find the absolutely like the people that are probably like the university wrestlers who just appear on like one random wrestling show in the 90s after mm-hmm. like their university days, that's kind of like the odd appeal. But Case, I am actually looking at the next book that I'm about to get scanned for us for, and I won't have it for next week, but we are going to be talking about Michinoku Pro very soon on this feed next week for those days, aren't we?
Next week, the return of those days. You know, I would imagine you and I will be doing some sort of Dragon Gate WrestleMania weekend content, maybe the week after that. But next week, it's the return of those days. We are in 1996, and we are going to be talking about, I would say, one of the more important stretches in the history of the entire company.
Yep, that's right, because it's 1996, and it's almost about time to talk about Kaientai Deluxe. And we get to talk about it next week. And I can't wait to get to that. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. Case is on Twitter at _inyourcase. I'm at Fuji Heya on Twitter, two eyes like Don Fuji. You could also join the conversation, the Voices of Wrestling Discord. There's a Dragon Gate channel that gets a lot of talk during shows. Recently, talking about Fire Pro translations was a topic in there yesterday. But also, and more importantly, to Open the Voice Gate, there's the Voice Gate channel where we post our show notes, our match listings for those days. Probably by next week, we'll have like another like landing page that will be posted there as well for that. But you can find all of our historical content there as well. But that's going to do it for this week on Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next time with Michinoku Pro in 1996. Take care, everyone.
Hi, I'm Andrew Rich. And if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.